Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Jeff, how are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. Sal, yourself?
Doing awesome.
Who do you have for us today?
Well, we have some new guests, long-time listeners, first-time podcasters with us in the podcast room today.
We finally found some listeners. We must be bringing them in.
That's right. We've got a couple of lawyers with us in the office today. Todd Jansen.
Are we in trouble?
No, we are not. Okay.
Hang on, let me start the
Brianna
meter.
Schrader.
Yeah, this is the most expensive podcast we've done.
That's right. The Jansen Schrader Ag Law LLC.
Yeah, so, that's right.
But before we get started with introductions, we have a tradition. Got to ask the question of the day. And I'm sorry, you guys don't take this mad at me for lawyers or anything, but what is the strangest thing you've ever seen someone do in public?
Wait a minute. Can we change this?
Sure.
It's the strangest thing you've seen somebody do in a courtroom.
Oh, that'd be even better.
We have attorneys.
Yeah. It's yeah. True. Goodness, the stories we could tell. I'll start with one.
Don't get us banned from YouTube.
Right. I got to be careful here. I'll start with, it wasn't the courtroom, but it was an interview. Actually, we were interviewing. We have law clerks, which are students who are still in law school, who, you know, between their first and second or second and third year will come. And it's great experience because you get to learn a little bit. What's it really like to be a lawyer, right? You had the classes, but now what's it really like? And this student, who was, you know, incredibly qualified, but obviously hadn't done a lot of interviews, walked into our office, got halfway into the room, looked around and goes, "Oh, I'm chewing gum. I'm not supposed to chew gum in an interview." Spits it into their hand, puts it to the other hand, and then reaches his gummy hand out to shake. And I was like, and this was pre-COVID, so maybe we weren't as worried about germs, but goodness, I looked at him and I looked at Todd and I was like, well, I mean, here I find myself shaking his hand. It's covered in slobber. And I was like, all right, first step is, you know, in interviews, don't do that, right? Don't do that. That's something you don't do. But so it wasn't the courtroom, but it was a good reminder of, you know, law students are still figuring this out. So he did not get the position, unfortunately.
He took one hand to the other, though.
And
I don't know what to do with my gum.
And then you spit the gum out right in front of me. And I'm like, well, what am I... What am I supposed to do with this?
That's where a fist bump comes in.
Right. That's where I said, well, I think this interview's over before it started. But, you know, I'm sure they've gone on to great success. So that's good.
That's awesome.
Todd, what about?
Well, if we're talking about legal proceedings, I would say I won't go into any specifics, but I think, you know, when we go into court, we try to prepare our clients to be on the stand, answer questions. You generally know what's going to come up, what topics are going to come up. So we prepare them, we rehearse, and then they get up there on the stand and they're asked a question and they end up saying something completely differently. So I won't give you any specifics, but it happens all the time. I think there's something about being in court, people get anxious and they end up saying things that maybe they wouldn't say normally, but it happens all the time. So,
and as a lawyer, that's an oh crap moment. Yeah. So,
because then you're wondering, okay, I don't really know where to go next with this because this isn't at all what we thought you were going to say.
Yeah. I think we've all watched the legal documentary, My Cousin Vinny.
Yes. You know, so. Very
one
true.
One of the best cross examinations I've ever seen is out of that movie. Yep. So
very real life.
So it's true. A lawyer never wants to ask a question they don't already know the answer to.
You always want to know the answer. Okay.
That's right.
But, and you know, when it's not your client, that can be harder to know the answer. But when it is your client, you think, well, I should know this answer. Yeah. And so when the answer's not what you expect, you just go, oh interesting.
That's the news, light, news the, to all of us.
Yeah, the light was red, you say, because you just told me it was green.
Yeah. Or you hear your co-counsel say, are you sure that's what you saw?
Do you want to think? Oh, let me ask that question another way here. Let's just ask this a different way.
Oh, yeah. Goodness. Okay, well, obviously, I can't do that because I'm not an attorney, and knock on wood, I haven't been in court. But I think just recently, one of the strangest things I've seen, and I'll just go with recent, is at a stoplight, I see this young man get out of his car and start with a towel and starts wiping his wheels off.
And I'm at a stoplight.
At a stoplight, and I'm like, yeah, and I'm just like, okay, it's going. This light will take a while, but he just jumped out. I assume he'd been to a car wash and decided that he didn't
want to spots on
his wheels. And I'm pretty sure those wheels had more value than the whole car.
They're fancy rims.
So that was just one of the strange things you see. You know, it was because when he jumped out, I'm like, is this a? I mean, I'm like a couple back. Is this a road rage thing or no? He was wiping his wheels off.
Got a car on fire or something.
Yeah, you don't want water spots on. Yeah, there we go.
So that it's important to keep your wheels clean. So,
note to self.
Yeah. Well, how about you, Sal?
Mine happened right on State Road 50 as you're coming up to the Martin County State Forest. Mm-hmm. As I'm going westbound, back in the 90s, this is early cell phones, and I was driving along, listening to the radio. And walking westbound also, fortunately, was a guy, and he was buck naked.
Oh, my gosh.
And like Jerry Clower said, you can be naked or you can be naked with your shoes on, but he was buck naked. And I'm like, oh, my gosh. And, of course, people coming around that hill and down that hill. I was going up that big hill. And, you know, people were just hitting their brakes and nobody wants to stop. I ain't stopping. I don't know what happened, but it was a dead zone back then. You couldn't talk at all, hardly through the National Forest.
That's before you could take pictures with your cell phone.
There was no pictures with cell phones. Right. And,
thankfully.
So as soon as I could get to a cell phone service back in the old analog cell days, I called the Martin County Sheriff's Department and, the dispatcher answered and I was like, hey, I said, I'm driving west on 50 and kind of give her where I was when I saw it. And, I said, there was a guy naked walking down the highway. And she goes, oh, him again.
Oh, that's Tom out there.
And I'm like, again? And she goes, yeah, we've had this problem before.
And so he's a regular.
He was a regular, but there's nothing around there.
It's pretty desolate right
there. There's not a pull-off place to make a decision to get to that point. So I don't know how he got there, but that was the strangest thing I've ever seen going down the road.
I think that was.
That's pretty good.
Well, let's get a transition, nice, easy segue right into ag law.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the Jansen Schrader law firm and tell us about what you do with ag law. This is going to be pretty interesting.
Sure. So we've been around now about 10 years and we've both been lawyers before that, but we both worked in an environmental law firm before we started Jansen Schrader. And, you know, I guess early on in my career, I saw agriculture as an underserved area in the legal area, right? So there just weren't a whole lot of lawyers who went to law school and then thought, you know, I want to go traipse around on a dairy farm during my time when I should be in the office. For me, you know, I was a farm kid and in my interview at the very first job I got, they said, you know, we get a lot of cases involving farmers, but nobody here is a farmer or has a farm background. So if you wanted to do that work, that'd be great. And so from then on, I really thought, okay.
So you got profiled right off the bat.
Profiling.
That's right. And so, you know, after a number of years, I'll cut the story short here, but after a number of years working in another firm, I thought, you know, the time is right to start a firm that just focuses on agricultural law. And Brianna was willing to go with me and start this venture, and it's been great ever since. And I'll let you explain a little bit more about what ag law is.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's great because
Are you a farm kid?
I was going to say. Same kind of. Tell us your experience.
He's from Kansas. I'm an Indiana farm girl. So I grew up in northeastern Indiana. Parents still live on the farm that was built by my great grandparents. So it's been the family for a long time. And so ag law ends up being a really fun way to kind of get to wear both hats, right? I can be a lawyer. I'm in the courtroom. I, you know, can rock a power suit and walk around and make those arguments. But then there are days when I do get to go walk around and look at a new site where we're thinking about building some hog barns or where the dairy's looking to expand and I've got to get out there and actually know what's going on. So I think we're really blessed in that we get to do both things, right? And wear those two different hats depending on what day of the week it is. And I think our practice kind of reflects that too, right? We're based in Indianapolis, right? I live in Indy in a neighborhood, but the majority of my practice is not in Indianapolis, right? We're around the state from the far northern, you know, I was in LaPorte County last week. We'll be all the way down on the banks of the Ohio for a hearing a week or two from now. So it's, we cover the whole state. And it's, I think it gives us an interesting perspective because we're there in Indianapolis, right? The, we've got the state house a few minutes away. We've got the big major law firms, you know, in our zip code. But most of our practice is out in the other parts of the state and beyond. So I think that's kind of a fun, again, getting to wear those two different hats at the same time.
Yeah, because all your clients, well, for the most part, would be a long way from Indy.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah.
Can you describe your practice in terms of, is there a, hey, we do a high percentage on the animal agriculture side, or is there a way to break that out?
Yeah, I think, so this is one of those reasons like Todd and I work well together because our practice, a lot of times lawyers will talk to you about, are they in litigation or transactional? So are they doing courtroom argument kind of work, or are they negotiating contracts and closing deals? And we do both of that. You know, we do both kinds of work. What ties our work together is that it's almost always, and now I would say 10 years in, it is always for ag entities. So it's livestock farms. It's, you know, row crop farm that gets approached by a solar developer. It's a dairy looking to expand. So on the litigation front, it ends up, frankly, just livestock farmers tend to have more litigation that gets thrown their way for better or worse. So there's a lot of livestock farmers that get involved that we represent, again, from, you know, the border of with Michigan down to Kentucky and everywhere in between.
Nice. Yeah. I like to think of our clients as falling in three buckets, right? So we have farmers, which tend to be livestock farmers or growers. We have agribusiness, which, you know, could be someone like Premier Co-op. And then we also have this practice, which is I call ag technology, which is a lot more startup companies that are in agriculture that have some new idea or invention or product, and they want to get that out across the country. And so that tends to be a little bit more national in scope, but a lot of what we do here is in Indiana. One other thing I want to mention about what Brianna said that I think is kind of interesting. You know, small towns used to have a lot of lawyers in them, and anymore, it's pretty hard to find young people who want to replace the older lawyers who are retiring. And so a lot of these rural areas are underserved, and that means we get those calls. And a lot of the lawyers who are there don't necessarily want to take an issue that might be a real hot potato in that community because they they want to serve everyone that they can. And we don't have that concern being in Indianapolis. And so we end up getting a lot of those, especially on the zoning side, I would say, where, you know, makes sense. It's a controversial issue.
We love hot potatoes.
Yeah.
Well, you can actually, I mean, the grower has his, whatever that interest is. I mean, the grower, I can see why that would be better to be out of the territory.
Yeah. And we've just found then we can come in kind of with a blank slate, right? And say, let's hear what the issues are. Let's hear what the facts are. We don't feel obliged to, oh, those folks who live on the other side of the river, they've always treated our firm well. We've got it. We can never go against them. And I'm not saying that local lawyers always have that, but sometimes there are issues they're just too close to. They've got clients, former clients. They did the wills for people on both sides of the issue, and that can start to feel a little yucky.
Yeah, went to high school with both parties.
Right, yeah, that's right.
Dated both parties, right?
Brianna, you mentioned contract, or I'll get the terminology wrong, contract law or litigation. Yeah. What kind of the difference, the litigations were, is that the zoning thing or is that?
I'd put the zoning in the litigation bucket. So the litigation, I would say it's a couple things. It's some of it's real traditional lawsuits, right? You run a dairy and somebody sues you because they don't like the dust that your truck makes, right? Okay. They think they've got more flies because of your dairy. That's sort of traditional litigation, right? We're going to argue in court over that issue. But I think it's bigger than that because I put in the litigation bucket those zoning disputes where you have to go in and maybe you need a special exception or a variance to
build.
You want
to put in a turkey barn.
Yeah. Or you need a variance. House. You got issues with setbacks, or you need a, you know, you need to rezone the property. And those can be appealed up the system, right, to a trial court, to the Court of Appeals, to the Supreme Court. So that's litigation. And I think especially the livestock industry is so highly regulated that there's a lot of permitting, regulatory compliance that they have to do. And I kind of put that in that same bucket because it involves advocacy for a certain position on behalf of your livestock farmer. So for me, all of those kind of fall into that litigation world.
Yeah. And even growers just aren't, none of us are probably very used to contacting an attorney, but then certainly with contracts and a lot of times the first interaction he may have with a new neighbor or or someone that he's farming around that moves in that has no experience with the country and living out in the country.
And the smells.
Sounds. Yeah.
Yep. I'll never forget my neighbor when 20 years ago, Kim and I, when we first got married, and he was spreading chicken litter on the field north of us. Of course, we had a prevailing, northwesterly winds there coming down towards us. And she comes in and says, "What is that smell?" And I'm like, "Well, that's chicken litter." And he's Frederick spreading that on his field. "Why? What did we do to him? Why is he doing that?" And I told her, I was like, he's spreads hog manure on his yard, so I don't know that he probably doesn't, he's not as impacted as you are. Yep. But this is a fascinating work that you all do, and you found a real niche. I think it's you said underserved, and I can imagine that really is an underserved.
Yep. And I would add one other thing that I don't think Brianna mentioned is that a lot of work that farmers, encounter involves either state or federal agencies. And oftentimes, there's a decision made by an agency that they don't agree with. And most people don't always understand that they can challenge those final decisions of agencies. So we end up doing a lot of that work too. They call it administrative law, but where you challenge an agency decision. And the first step is an administrative law judge. And then if you don't like that ruling, you can take it to a trial court and have them rule on the issue. And so we end up doing a lot of that work too, which is pretty interesting work. And I'd say pretty unique too. Very few lawyers really do that kind of work.
Some people don't like to sue the state. Well, you just, doesn't bother us.
You feel powerless. Well, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So I guess for our listeners out there, sometimes you feel like, well, that's a state agency. What's the chances of winning against, the big, state agency? I mean, it is possible.
Yes, absolutely. And we've had some great decisions by courts where we've overturned an agency decision. So,
but I think it is hard. Like to your question, I think about my own family, right? If we got a letter in the mail that said the state of Indiana, through this or that agency has decided X, Y, Z. And that's not good for us. But I think a lot of people get that letter and just go, oh man. Oh,
is this like eminent domain and stuff like that?
It could be something like eminent domain. It could be, think of all the alphabet soup of agencies, the Indiana Department of Environmental Management, the Department of Natural Resources, the Grain Buyers Agency. All of these different agencies make decisions all the time that really impact farmers in their pocketbook and in their daily life. And so you get that decision. And I think for a lot of people, their first instinct is, darn it, the agency ruled against me. But you don't win every case, but sometimes there's really good grounds to say, hold on, we've got to get somebody to take a closer look at this because I don't know that the agency got it right. So, it's always worth checking.
That's good to know.
From a legal representation standpoint, what do you think some of the biggest issues facing growers or how about growers and ag businesses today? What do you think is some of the biggest, we'd say hot potatoes or what are some of the things that are out there that we may not even know yet that are kind of a risk?
Yeah, I would say the biggest issue for farmers in general is that you know, the people who buy their products are more disconnected from the farm than they probably ever have been. And so that means that they have their own ideas about what farming should be and how farming should be done. And it's, they're so far removed from actual farming that it's hard to understand what really goes on a farm and how products are really raised and produced. And so I think, you know, that's something that sort of translates into a lot of the work that we do, because for example, if you want to build a new dairy barn, right? It may be in a county. It typically is in a county that hasn't seen a lot of economic development. And so we'll have a client who's going to bring 20 jobs to that county, right? And, you know, you name it, $20, $50, $100 million investment, which is enormous for a lot of rural counties. Sure. But yet the people will line up on the other side to oppose it. And, you know, we'll fight you at every turn on getting a permit to operate, on getting a zoning approval in the local county, you know, maybe even file a nuisance action against the dairy. So, you know, that's the type of issue that we deal with, and where I think there's just so much disconnect between what happens on that farm and what people think is going to happen on that farm. And then ultimately, if you go back to these areas 10, 20 years later, I think you see a lot of harmony, and you don't see the problems that people thought they were going to see.
Yeah. Yeah. I taught the other day. I was down at IU in Bloomington, and it was really fun to get to go into a classroom with juniors and seniors in college from all over the country, right? But they're taking business classes, and they have a sustainability course. And I've for a few years been able to go in and teach the ag part of that. And so these are the kind of conversations we end up having, because there's a perception of agriculture, and it's easy, right? You can find something online to support whatever opinion you have, right? Go to WebMD. It's cancer, right? You always have cancer.
Oh, yeah.
But the similar, it happens with agriculture too. And so getting to talk to these kids a little bit about, okay, you think that, I don't know, big hog farms are bad, right? And you've maybe seen headlines here, there, or the other place that support your position. Let's dig into that, right? Why are they so bad? Well, do you know about, you know, the kind of animal care, the levels of animal care, veterinarian care, comfort of the animals, how important that is, and what goes, you know, and that doesn't get as many clicks, right? Those stories. So, you know, it's a really interesting thing to do. One of the things we talked about just, you know, the other day down at IU was the Right to Farm Act and how that works. And there were some folks that had the perception that the Right to Farm Act, well, that just says farmers can do whatever they want and it's not a fair law. And I was like, whoa. Let's unpack that a little bit, right? Because when you dig into the details, which takes more than a 7-second click, right? Not that these students, I mean, these are smart kids.
They saw it on TikTok.
But you have to then go look at the source, right? Read about it some more, understand it. Well, why is it that way? What's the purpose of this? And when you really dig in, and I think agriculture, we see a lot of that. If you really dig in and learn, you know, come up with an alpaca wool producer. I don't know a lot about that, but if I really dig in and learn and talk to somebody who does it, you know, your opinion might change. So I think that's sure. Sort of a conceptual thing. That's not a specific legal problem, but that's just from a high level. That's something I think our clients and growers and livestock farmers, they're dealing with that all the time. And that's consistent, I think.
It goes back to what Todd said about just how far removed people are from the farm.
Yeah.
And just have no contact in where their food comes from or their wool or cotton, or, you know, they just don't even know.
Well, I think we've had such abundance in this country
that
they've never had to think about it. So it's just always going to be there.
I have little kids, and I took, you know, we go up to the farm still at my parents' all the time, and I kind of joke, but I'm a little bit serious that, you know, these kids have good country genes, but we live in the city and we live a city lifestyle. So every once in a while, I got to pull them out of there and throw them on the farm. And, you know, my dad will have them pick up rocks or something. And I'm like, good, this is good for you, right? So making sure they see that side of it still.
That's why I have to get my grandkids out of Fishers every once in a while, get back to the farm.
That's right. My kids were like, you know, Grandpa's going to pay us a penny a rock. And I was like, ooh, I've had that job. It's not good.
I fell for that when I was a kid too.
Yep. They all do.
That's why I always tell the story that years ago on my first job out of college, I moved to Michigan, and growing up in central Indiana, we had lots of rocks.
Yeah.
And I was the number one rock picker and got up there and I found out they have actual automatic rock picking machines. And
wait a second. What?
I'm like, I call my dad. I'm like, do you know what they have these? He goes, I didn't need one of those. I had you.
You know, it's like, you worked for way below minimum wage.
That's right.
You know, when I was a kid, we'd see a field that was dissed up and all of us would, you know, four or five of us in a car, we never once got turned down. If we'd see a fresh disc field and go, say, if we go pick up rocks and we just go get the hay wagon and the tractor, and we never got told no.
I mean, that's still working on kids today. Right. I can tell you next week, spring break, my son's going to be picking up rocks.
I missed out. Growing up in Kansas, we just didn't have a lot of rocks in the field. So, but we had other problems.
Yeah. So back to the law firm. What's some of the proudest legal victories? I think, I mean, you probably can't get into case by case, but you can kind of give us vague scenarios. And
statute of limitations is over. You want to start naming stuff?
That's right.
Go
we
for
can
it.
Name names. I can give you addresses.
I'll start out with one. I'd say our biggest legal victory, we had a case involving some farmers who had purchased a new type of insurance. And when it came time to present a claim, they had a multi-million-dollar claim that first year. And it's a long story, but ultimately, the insurance company didn't pay the claim, and so we ended up having to sue the insurance company and go to court, and we had a five-day jury trial in Indianapolis, and we had to explain to a jury of non-farmers about how not only how the farm worked, how this very complicated insurance policy worked, that you needed accountants to explain. And it was so complex. We thought, how are we ever going to explain this to a jury? But we did explain it to a jury. And when, you know, the dust settled and the jury came back, they ultimately ruled in favor of our client. And in fact, awarded them more damages than we had originally asked for at that time. And so they thought the damage was even worse than we had explained it, I guess. But still, that was a moment where I'd say probably one of the most difficult things we did was trying to explain this really complicated insurance policy and what had happened to a jury of people who are, you know, a school teacher, you know, or I think we had a puppeteer on our jury.
We did have a puppeteer.
Puppeteer.
Full time?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. So but that was such a wonderful, when that jury comes back in your favor, it's a feeling unlike anything else. And so that was a great legal victory for a farmer who, I mean, they almost went bankrupt from this, obviously, because it was such an enormous loss that they thought would be covered, had been promised to them that it would be covered, and they were left high and dry.
Well, and what was really cool about that, and a theme, I think, through some of our big litigation, you know, proud moments are when, you know, David versus Goliath gets kind of overused, but it really was, right? Because they had something like three different law firms from all over the country, and it's a, you know, global billion-dollar business, right, against an Indiana farm family with an Indiana ag law firm. But it was so we really felt like we're up against a big company and big firms. And that made it a really sweet victory, I guess, when, you know, the truth did prevail, right? And ultimately we could, without putting the jury to sleep, tell the story. And so that was just, you know, that was really cool. And it was, you know, one of those where you're holding your breath and then you're like, did I really?
It sounds like a movie.
It felt like a movie. Yeah. It felt like the scene of a movie, right? Yeah. You know, I told Todd, I remember the night before the closing arguments, right? I'm pacing in my hotel room, you know, thinking about closing. What am I going to say? And I'm suddenly having that Will Ferrell moment of, I don't know what to do with my hands. Do I put them in my pockets? That feels really weird. They suddenly look so big. Where am I going to put my hands? You know? So it was just like little moments like that. But at the end of the day, being able to do that for a local farm, good farm family, you know, it doesn't get any better than that. And
so is it like we see on TV, the big corporation, the big insurance company, their lawyers come in and it's like, hey, you know, we're going to, you know, small, you know, they're going to squash you out or weight you out, or this will get so expensive you need to drop it.
We're
going to
bury you in papers.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And in this instance, in fact, the lawyers came from, was it Mississippi?
Some of the lawyers were from Mississippi.
Yeah. So, you know, they had that nice Southern drawl like you'd see in a John Grisham movie, and even, you know, did some of the, you know, I'm not from around these parts.
Oh, shucks. Yeah.
I will remember too that one of the attorneys, and they were nice people. I got nothing against them personally, right? But I did my closing, and I feel like it went pretty well. But you always, you know, you could do something else. And he gets up and he just is like, "Oh shucks, now I don't have this fancy technology like this young lady over here." And I was like, "Fancy technology? It's like a bare bones PowerPoint that I made 4 hours ago. What are you talking about?" And ultimately though, and I have to give credit to our Indiana jury system, jurors are smart, right? They, we like to think as lawyers that we're directing the movie, right? We're directing the scenes, but I think jurors see through that, right? And so I think they, you know, there's ups and downs over the course of a trial. You have a day that you go, "Oh, that went really well." And then you have a day that you go, "Could have gone better," right? But the jurors see through that, I think. And by the end of the week, they really did understand what was at stake and what had happened. And so that's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of a reassuring thought, I guess, that we've got smart people in our state that can see through the smoke, right? And probably all lawyers, us included, right? We blow a little smoke now and then, but the jurors saw through that, and that was pretty cool.
And I know people always joke about trying to get out of jury service, and I always say, don't, you should do it, because we need good jurors. We need well-educated jurors. We need smart people sitting there who want to listen and hear the facts, and it can make a big difference in someone's life. Yeah. And so if you get the chance to serve on a jury, take it seriously and do it.
It's your civic duty. Yeah. And none of us, all of us are busy at work. And
yes,
that's the bad thing, is that you've got folks that are the busiest that would probably be really good jurors. And they're like, how can I do this?
How can I do both? Yeah. How can I be in two places at once? That
jury summons never comes, like, especially when we work in seasonal business. It's like, I never get a jury summons in the middle of winter.
February.
It's
always
like, you know, right, first of May.
Yeah. And you're going, I can't.
January would be much better for this.
Yes, it would.
Could I request a reschedule? So you asked about like legal, you know, victories that you can feel good about, right? And we had another one that was real interesting, because we went to trial sort of still in the midst of COVID. So we had the interesting experience of some arguments that we made leading up to trial that normally would be in person, and you can see the judge and, you know, body language, and you can see, oh, I'm losing them here. We did some of those on Zoom, right? So that was sort of an interesting.
And it was new.
And it was new
to all of us.
And we were still getting used to, you know, where do I have my papers if I'm on, you know, just different things like that. But we ultimately, it was really interesting, because the judge said, look, guys, I know everybody wants a jury trial, but with COVID and, you know, we're on code orange and then red and back again, you're not going to get a jury trial for another 2 years. Just the way the schedule works and where you fall, it's going to be a long time. So I'll give you some choices. I can get you scheduled jury trial, you know, 2024 or whatever it was. Or if you're all willing to agree, we can do what we call a bench trial. And this happens all the time in Indiana and every state, where you try your case not to the jury, but to the judge. So the judge sort of sits in place of the jury. And we thought about it and we said, well, this, again, we represented a farm family from Northern Indiana who had been out a lot of money. This was against a government agency and they'd been out a lot of money for a lot of years. And, you know, you can try to, you know, okay, operating loan, we can change this and maybe we can plant something different here. You know, they're trying to make things work, but they can't do that forever. And we said, it's time. Let's get to a trial. We'll take a bench trial. So we had a, you know, week long bench trial in front of a judge in Northern Indiana. Again, kind of the feel of we're up against the state of Indiana, you know, through an agency. They've got literally an endless pocketbook where our client is saying, okay, yeah, I guess, you know.
How many hours is that?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Exactly. Exactly.
What's per diem?
Right. You don't want to know.
Yeah.
And, you know, thinking about, okay, I'm putting all this money into this legal case. That's money I'm not using to buy fertilizer or seed or whatever it is. But, you know, we ultimately prevailed there against the agency, which was really cool because the government, and not always, but they have the ability anyways to make a case take a long time, right? Years and years of litigation.
Which means nothing to the agency.
Right.
It's, you know, they've got good lawyers, and they have a sense of duty and they represent the state. But for us, I can say, oh no, I'm representing Jeff. He's right there. I see him. I talk to him. He's a real human. And I think that makes a difference, you know, in our practice. So that was another one that you could kind of, when it was all said and done, you could really feel good about the work you're doing, you know. And sometimes we do crazy stuff too when we have cases that we're like,
oh, we want to hear about that.
Yeah, right? Like, that's when the mics stop rolling.
Yeah, have you got one crazy thing that you've like, I can't believe I did this or I can't believe I got involved in this?
That you not that they want to talk about, apparently.
Yeah. Gotta be real careful. We've had some crazy ones, and you know, sometimes it's the other side says or does crazy things. Sometimes it's your own client that you're, you know, sort of shocked at what comes out of their mouth or what they say and do. And you have to sit there.
Let's put it this way.
Have you, poker face.
Have you had to fire a client and say, I'm done. We can't do this.
Yeah. It's really hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard. But sometimes you say, you know, either, I mean, the boring ones are like, look, if you don't ever respond to me, my calls, my emails, my texts, my letters, I can't really represent you because I don't know what you want. That's a little boring. But sometimes it's, hey, the position you want us to take is not something I ethically feel comfortable doing. And so I can try to talk you out of it because despite, you know, all beliefs to the contrary, lawyers do have ethics, right? Yeah. And it's really important. And so we'll have, you know, it's happened, not often, but it's happened where someone wants to take a position that we just say, man, my law license, that's the only skill set I have, right? So I've got to protect that. And so it doesn't happen often, but it has happened.
I think that's the most dirt we're going to get.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah.
You let me know when these mics aren't live, yeah, and then we'll talk.
Thomas is always listening. Well, I guess with kind of one of the last things here was just if you could educate the public on one thing about modern agriculture that would, you know, and this goes out to everybody on these podcasts, that would help them kind of settle into the community or understand, you know, modern production agriculture and what it's about. What kind of advice would you give them?
I guess what I would say is that, and, you know, we work with a lot of larger farms, and these are still ultimately, most of them at the end of the day, are family run businesses. And even though they don't look like they did 50 years ago, much of that hardware, you could say, in that family unit and how the businesses run is still very similar. And even though they're much bigger than they used to be, it doesn't mean that animal care standards are worse. You know, it doesn't mean that they're not taking better care of animals today than they were 50 years ago. And so I think that's something that there's a big misconception in the general public who doesn't understand modern production agriculture, that, you know, the larger farms often are the most regulated and have the most oversight of the production methods of any farms versus some that are small enough that they kind of fall off the radar and can do what they want. That's one thing.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll go a step further with that. And that is that, you know, we see family farms now, they're adopting a lot of technology. And again, it doesn't make them not a family farm. Okay, they're a corporation. They're an LLC. They're an LLC owned by a separate LLC. That they're still a family farm. And while harvest equipment, I mean, you guys know, it looks a little different than it did in my grandparents' time, right? We've got yield monitors that can give us this granular data, which is really cool. I don't think the general public knows that. When you've got a big dairy, they are all about cow comfort, right? And they've got the cows, they got a good life, right? They've got misters and they got little back scratchers and they're wearing an Apple Watch just like I am to track their steps. And but none of that means that that isn't a family farm. And we hear that a lot. I think sometimes at the, you know, in lawsuits and litigation, in zoning work, where, you know, people who maybe are not as supportive of agriculture say, you know, we're all about family farms, not yeah. this, not yeah. this corporate
these
conglomerate.
Factory farms.
These yeah. Yeah. industrial farming. And I said, well, that's when, you know, you kind of want to sit them down and say, well, let's talk about what do you think is a family farm? What does that look like to you? Because, you know, if we are going to feed the America, feed the world, if we are going to be having sustainable practices and environmentally friendly practices, we need things like bigger operators and we need technology. And it's smart for that family to have an LLC and not operate it out of their own personal pocketbook. But none of that means it's not, you know, a Midwest family farm. Yeah. So those are a lot of conversations we're having around the state with different folks all the time.
Very good.
You know, I think the couple other hot items out there, solar farms, windmills, yeah. Obviously we've kind of hit on the carbon. Livestock bar. Yeah, carb. Is there, you know, are you guys starting to see a lot of work in those areas?
A ton.
Yes, a lot of work.
Anything that you can kind of give us some insight to?
I guess,
you know, as if I'm approached about my family farm and hey, we want to put a windmill there, mm-hmm. I don't know what to do. I can look at the paperwork. So should I call you and say, hey,
yeah,
guide me through this?
I would say the first thing you want to do is whoever approaches you, ask them for a word version of that contract they want you to sign. You don't have to sign the document that they just put in front of you. Those things, they are negotiable. We can work on different terms. And so, you know, get a word version and then find a lawyer. And what any lawyer, I mean, it's what we would do, but any lawyer who's going to review those should be looking at is increasing the protections that you have, right? Increasing the way we're going to protect your land. We're going to take care of the soil and the drainage. Increase your payments. And we want to decrease any potential obligations or liabilities that you could somehow land on. So I always go into any of those, carbon, wind, solar, you know, hydrogen, whatever's coming next, with those ideas in mind. How can we protect the farmer and the landowner and the land itself? We still come across people who will say, hey, yeah, I signed what they gave me. And I'm like, well, what lawyer, who helped you with this? Mm-hmm. Oh, nobody. I just signed what they gave me. And now 5 years later, I'm kind of wondering if maybe I could have done something a little different. And it's a whole lot harder to unring that bell, right? So that would be my first advice. Get a word version, get a lawyer. Doesn't have to be us. I mean, it could be us, but it could be anybody. Find a lawyer who can look through that 50-page contract that could last for 30 years on your land with your heirs and your heirs' heirs. So,
I'd say a lot of times people don't compute that. They think, well, I don't want to spend, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 on a lawyer to look at this, right? But then if you look at it, it's like, well, this is going to pay, you know, $4.5 million over 20 years. So isn't it worth a couple thousand dollars for a lawyer to look at it so that your interests are protected?
Yeah.
Right. You have to recalculate.
Or if you're liable for something 20 years down the road that you didn't know was coming.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think these, a lot of these new sort of energy projects that are out there, We see them oftentimes. It's a way for our farmers to diversify their income stream, right? So they don't take all their land out of production, but maybe they'll take 100 acres and put it in a solar farm or put a couple windmills up, because it's a consistent revenue stream when, you know, markets are otherwise pretty volatile.
All right. Todd, Brianna, if we needed a ag law yes. representation, how would we reach you?
So the easiest way is to just go to aglaw.us, which is our website.
Aglaw.us.
Yes.
Very good. All right. And what's that joke? I hate all lawyers except for mine. these are great lawyers here.
Yeah. Hey, thank you. Thank you very much for having us.
This has been so interesting. And I think it is neat that whether it's in ag retail or ag business or farmers, that you all have the experience and kind of the background that you can connect the dots and
speak the language.
That's a fascinating case about how you had to educate the jury on complicated insurance and agriculture at the same time.
And keep them from falling asleep after lunch.
That's right. For 5 days.
it's really fun. I mean, I think we're lucky, we're blessed to get to work in this field. So I wouldn't trade anything.
That's awesome.
Right. Yeah. Very good. Well, Jeff, that's all I've got. Anything else?
I think we're good.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us. And that's another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.